Welcome to CHOATE's Intellectual Property Insights podcast series, hosted by intellectual property, litigation, and corporate attorneys covering trending topics at the intersection of science, technology, and law.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another installment of the CHOATE Hall and Stewart IP podcast series. My name is Michael Chenal. I'm a patent attorney in the Patent and Intellectual Property Group at CHOATE, and I am joined today by my two colleagues, Melissa Adams and Margo Monroe. Today, we want to talk about one of our favorite topics, IP due diligence. This is a complicated topic that would likely span many, many podcast episodes, but the purpose today is really just to speak at a high level about how we approach IP due diligence, certain issues we're identifying when we're going through materials and diligence, and some thoughts on how to effectively use outside counsel like CHOATE when performing these diligence projects. So just a quick note before we dive in, this podcast is intended to be focused on from the perspective of a potential acquirer or investor and licensee looking to invest or acquire or license an asset or technology, not as much when you're sitting on the other side of the table being acquired, although there's plenty to discuss there too. So we have three of us here who have practices across three core areas of life sciences, myself in chemistry and small molecule, Melissa in biology and biologics, and Margo in the biologics, bioengineering, and tech bio space. And each area has a lot of overlaps, but also has its own issues that we want to cover as well. So now to kind of kick us off, I'm going to send it over to Melissa. And can you talk a little bit about some big questions we look to answer in the traditional diligence analysis?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the intro there, Mike. We always start by letting the investor client know that we frame our diligence around three essential pillars. And what those three pillars are quality of IP protection, ownership and control of IP, and freedom to operate, or FTO as you typically call it. And we find this really helps us ground us as well as the investor throughout the diligence process by always going back to these pillars as a reference for when issues arise. And specifically when thinking about risk mitigation strategies, when you run into any red flags that you might identify during the diligence. For today, we're going to focus on those first two pillars, quality of IP protection, as well as ownership and control of IP. And then in the next installation of this podcast series, we're going to turn to freedom to operate, or FTO. When we're starting the diligence process, we usually hold a kickoff meeting with the investor client. And the goal behind that meeting is to understand what they already know about the asset or technology, as well as the related IP landscape, and whether that IP landscape is part of the deal or if they have any knowledge of third-party IP. With this meeting, we also want to understand their priorities. And so what are they looking to achieve with their asset or technology, depending on what it is? For example, what's their plans and what's their timeline for commercialization? You know, and really, what's the end goal of the diligence?
Great, thanks. So Margo, when you're getting on these first calls, trying to help get oriented and get everything up to speed, what are some of the key questions you like to ask to help frame the analysis?
Yeah, Mike. So what we always like to consider and what's most essential from our point of view is to hear about why the investor client is excited about the technology. What is the story of the technology? And if any potential IP issues are already on their mind, such as FTO or exclusivity. This helps me and the team at CHOATE understand their perspective. So when we get on the kickoff call with the target, we can ask more specific questions. These calls are also a way to understand the value drivers, like which platform or products are key, the history of the target, and key individuals. We also ask about material third-party relationship and agreements and any known competitors and how the target's technology is the same or different from those competitors.
And this is also a good chance for us to understand from the target company what is the plan for exclusivity, if they have any, how are they planning to leverage the assets, and how the investor client would like this information reported back. Do they want slides? They want a memo, just a quick phone call? And so these kickoff calls are really, really important to help us get oriented and be as efficient as possible when we're first taking these projects on. After the kickoff call, I like to at least pull what I can from the public domain about the target's patent estate. I'm also now thinking about data room access and additional information that we might need from the target. And we're going to need to start thinking about a load of information. And it's important to make sure that we have our requests organized and efficient and thinking about how we organize the large amount of data and other information we're going to get during this process. So in light of that, I guess, Melissa, how do you typically like to think and organize when you're gathering that data and getting the process going?
Yeah, great question, Mike, and definitely something that is critical to the diligence process at this stage where we are gathering this large amount of information and having to distill it down. And so what we do typically is we coordinate with the target and we provide them with a checklist of the materials and documents that we'd like to review. So really it's a wish list. And what that's going to focus on is one, what matters most to our investor client. And then second, anything that might have popped up during that initial kickoff call that may seem unique to this deal and stood out to us when we were having, you know, the initial question series. So the goal of the checklist is to provide questions to the target in advance. And really what we want to do is we want them to be able to come to calls prepared, and we want to avoid multiple rounds of request. We also want to make sure we get access to all of the technical information about the asset or the technology that we're diligencing as soon as possible, because that will be essential as we assess the quality of the IP protection and ultimately freedom to operate or FTO. And again, what we want to emphasize is that these checklists and this organization, the goal here is to minimize the number of calls with both parties. And what that's going to lead to is increased efficiency as well as reduced cost for our client. So with that, we typically do have a data room. And what that data room serves as is an organization hub for all this information to help with sharing of documents between the parties. And then as items come in or are reviewed, we check them off the list, and then outstanding items are kept on the list. It sounds really easy in practice, but in reality, it actually can get complex pretty fast, and it requires a lot of coordination, organization, and then follow-up on our part. From there, Margot, is there any particular approach you use for how you coordinate with the target?
Yeah, Melissa. So to go back to your thoughts on making this sound easy, and however, in fact, it's actually quite complex. I always try to have the investor client feel that this process is as easy and most efficient as possible. And one way that I do that is specifically with respect to the first pillar, which is quality of protection. A lot of the key information requests will also turn on the stage of the development of the asset at issue. For example, is the asset early and preclinical? Has there ever been IP filed on the asset? Is the asset at late stage with multiple families or even commercial? Another question we like to ask is, should we also have access to regulatory documents to match product to label?
And this is still not accounting for any search and analysis of the patent landscape. So the target may be aware of who they view as competitors, but they may also not be fully aware of the actual patent landscape around their technology. So that's why it's key for successful diligence to have attorneys with a strong scientific background and the experience in that tech space to understand and analyze the relevant IP. And I think that's something that we pride ourselves on at CHOATE.
Great point, Melissa. So for example, in the complex biologic space, as many folks know, new biologics are being identified using AI-driven platforms. And then in some cases, those new biologics being identified are being incorporated into known compounds or formats to create new molecules with beneficial properties. Clearing these types of molecules are actually not only interesting, but especially tricky in that there may be broad claims out there that pose a risk from an FTO perspective that could arguably cover the new molecule. But on the upside, in this situation where patent claims are still alive, it is becoming more difficult to enforce these types of broad claims based on court interpretations, such as support requirements that are required or lacking in those earlier filed families with the broad claims.
And similar questions exist in the small molecule space too, especially when we're looking to do things like repurpose old drugs for new uses or designing new drugs that are inspired by old ones. And one of the things that we really look for as well, and that the target estate is a good invention story. You know, if without it, that's going to hurt the quality of protection angle for the target company.
Yeah, Mike. And in addition to these technical issues, we also have procedural issues that come into play. And that's where we're really looking at, did the target actually file their patent applications in a timely manner as well as in a correct manner with the patent office? And then we also want to take into account questions such as foreign filing licenses, where those need to be obtained, you know, complying with Article 4 of the Paris Convention. And then from there, analysis of when they and others may have made relevant public disclosures that could serve as prior art and could ultimately be problematic depending on their filing timeline.
So as we can see, there's lots to consider on the quality of protection side. And maybe now we can take a minute to turn to the next pillar, the ownership of IP. So here we want to make sure we're actually dealing with the right party, for example, the party that actually owns or has the right to license the technology we're reviewing. And this is important to consider is ownership can change hands several times over the lifetime of an asset. And it's our job to make sure that the chain of title is correct. So Margot, when you're looking at this question, how are you evaluating ownership and control?
Thanks, Mike. Great question. This is actually a really interesting pillar because what may seem obvious is in most cases not quite as simple and straightforward as we would like to think. So checking the ownership of the underlying IP early in the process is absolutely critical to avoid issues that hold up a deal. This is an example where that initial kickoff call and relationship with the other side can actually be quite helpful to identify and quickly resolve any issues in a timely and efficient way. I'd also like to emphasize the importance of checking that valuable in-license IP, which is often licensed as foundational IP from an academic institution. The target actually has exclusive license rights in the particular field of use and territory that is of interest to the investor client. For example, we often see in-licensed university IP that is a key value driver for the target. For these types of in-licensed IP, it is so important to check if the IP was funded via federal grants, and if so, to confirm that the university has been compliant with its reporting obligations under Bayh-Dole. For example, to check to see whether those grants and that the government does not have any ownership claim to the in-licensed IP. Now, depending on the technology claimed and or disclosed in the in-licensed IP, government funding may be top of mind during the diligence process.
And we do see companies not getting this right, and it always ends up being a difficult conversation, but it's an important thing to chase down. On that note, I think this might be a good place to hit pause for the day. So thank you guys very much for joining us. And hopefully you'll come back next time where we'll talk about the third pillar of the diligence process. That's freedom to operate. So thank you very much. And we'll talk soon.
For more information, please visit www.choate.com. You can also listen to additional podcast episodes in the newsroom of our website and subscribe to them wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice for a specific situation. If you wish to obtain legal advice, you should retain an attorney and explain the facts of your particular situation.